We're going to try to cover a separate topic tonight that was not on the agenda. We started last week on the subject of criticism, and we'll get back to that maybe even tonight. But I want to begin with a different topic, only because it is so common and so commonly misunderstood. And then we'll get back to criticism. When a person comes home, be it a husband or a wife, they want to be greeted warmly. Now, warmly for a husband is different than warmly for a wife. For a husband, it means, "I'm so happy to see you, supper is ready, the house is neat, and now silence. Maybe, how was your day?" For a wife, to be greeted warmly is to listen to how her day was and to listen to all her difficulties and to hear about how the kids were. And at the end of the day, when a husband comes home, so he's had a rough day, she's had a rough day. He wants quiet. She wants to share with him everything that's been burdening her. But that's not our topic for tonight. Our topic for tonight is something different. It's understanding a certain aspect of speech in which men and women differ. We've discussed in the past that when men speak, so our speech is very much goal-oriented. If I want something, I'll talk. If I don't want something, I won't talk. If I have some information to impart, I'll tell you. And if not, I'll be silent. A woman was once commenting to her friend. She said, "We drove the whole way to my husband's parents' house, and he didn't say a word. And I decided I was upset at him. I'd wait for him to say the first word. But after 45 minutes, I decided I married a robot because he had said nothing. So after 45 minutes, I could bear it no longer. And I said, 'Are you so upset at me that for 45 minutes you don't say a word?' And he looked at her startled and said, 'What do you mean? I had nothing to say.'" Now, the Gemara tells us in Megillah, "Asara kabin shel dibur yardu la'olam." There were 10 measurements of speech that came down to the world. 9 were given to women and 1 was given to men. So like one wife told her husband, she said, "I have 9 times as much as you to use up in this lifetime. I got to get going. Don't be upset I'm talking so much. I got a lot to say." But where we're headed is an understanding of the difference between men and women in speech. For men, speech, again, as we said, is goal-oriented. We have a very specific purpose that we speak, that causes us to speak, to begin in conversation. And once that purpose is met, our conversation ends. So if a couple says, "Let's see if our neighbors want to come for Shabbos," if they're an experienced couple, the husband will say, "Let me call." And the wife will say, "Yeah, better you call. It'll be a 1-minute conversation." He'll pick up the phone, ask for the neighbor's husband, and say, "Hi, you guys coming for Shabbos?" And the guy will say either yes or no, and say, "Okay, thank you, have a good Shabbos." And then the conversation will end. If the wife were to call, and she were to talk that way to the woman, that would be considered a very rude conversation. You don't call and say, "Hi, how are you? And connect with me." Why? Because for women, speech is used to connect. Now, this isn't our main point here tonight. We're headed for something else. This concept in and of itself is of grave importance. Once we understand this, so we can understand why a wife will want to talk to her husband a lot, and will give them the attention, because intrinsically, when we enter a conversation, innately, we automatically want, "Okay, what do you want from me?" And when the other side starts rambling on and on, or in our mind it's rambling, so then our patience wears thin. "What do you want from me? If you're talking to me, you want something." "No, because I am male. And when I talk, I want something. So if you're talking to me, you obviously want something. Well, what do you want?" And that can be very frustrating. And the main point where I want to get to tonight, we'll get to in a minute, where a common error that happens in communication between men and women. But first, let's just explore this a little bit more generally. Some of you might have been present when I gave that classical example that I give every few months about the wife that comes home and tells her husband, "You don't know what happened today." And the husband's sitting on edge and listening. So I see the nods of heads. You guys remember the story. Now the wife goes on and on. She got to the supermarket. When she got to the supermarket, it was so cold, and she didn't bring a sweater with her. And when they got in, she met her friend who she hadn't seen for years. And as they walked around the aisle, she couldn't imagine the price. And the husband's sitting there waiting for the punchline, and she's going on and on and on and on. And 10 minutes later, he's still looking and trying to seem interested and wondering, yeah. Well, the punchline was she wants to talk to you. She wants to connect with you. And some of you might remember the story about the couple that was going out for to Simcha, and the wife asks her husband what to wear, and the husband tells her, "We're in a rush, whatever you want, you look great and everything." And she's already, what hair covering, and then she's what necklace, and then what earrings, and what shoes, and eventually he finally tells her, "Enough, dress however you want, I gotta go, we agreed we'd be there on time. We gotta go," and she's all hurt, and he's all hurt. Neither one understands why the other one is hurt, and she really wanted to connect with him in dressing for that wedding. We discussed other aspects of that misunderstanding. And some of you might remember the story we discussed about the couple that had a row. Yeah, sometimes it happens. In the best of couples, sometimes they disagree. I'll tell you a little secret. In the best of couples, often they disagree. And at the end of the day, he calls her up and says, "Let's talk, let's work out what happened." And she says, "Fine." And they meet outside and they go for a walk. And he says, "Well, how do you sit?" And she's silent. And he tells her, "Didn't we agree that we'd go for a walk and talk and understand how we got this misunderstanding yesterday?" And she's still silent. And he says, "Well, okay, if you don't want to talk, I'll tell you how I see it, but I'd really rather hear your side first." And then he starts telling her how he sees it. And when he's done, he says, "Okay, now I said, what do you say?" And she's silent, and she's very upset. And he's getting upset, and he's wondering, why is she getting upset? We agreed we'd talk. We agreed we'd say what's bothering each side. Why isn't she telling me her understanding of things? And she's upset at him, and she's not willing to talk. And weeks later, when they go for another walk and they start talking, and he asks her how her day was, and they start talking about all kinds of other things, and then a half hour, 45 minutes into the conversation, she starts discussing with him what happened back then. And after they finish talking about it, he asks her, "Why was this time different than last time? Why now were you willing to share it with me?" And she tells him, "Because this time you wanted to talk to me." What's the difference? Because for a woman, if you want to talk to me, so then start talking small talk. Connect with me. After we've spoken and rambled about all kinds of other things, then with time we can get to the point. Because speech is a form of connection. For men, speech is goal-oriented. So he walks into the conversation like he's talking to his buddy. So he says, "Get straight to the point." She's not ready to get straight to the point. Yeah?
I don't know. I see there's a big problem, because on one side, Philip Cabot says you shouldn't waste your words. You know, like, and then you work on yourself, like at the time you're in Yeshiva, and then you start to date, and you say only when you have to say something, you know, because you shouldn't waste your word. But then you have a problem, because when you make small talks, that's like useless stuff, but for a woman it's useless, so you are that.
We didn't say you have to talk useless stuff. We said you have to listen to it. That's first. And secondly,
But then you don't say anything.
Oh no, you participate in the conversation. And secondly, the Mishnah says, "Al tarbe sicha im ha'isha." Don't have a lot of idle chatter with the woman. Some is necessary, and some is necessary to maintain the rapport, the relationship. One isn't supposed to have a lot of it. Now, what's a lot? That's hard to define. But there's a certain amount which is intrinsic to having a relationship. And she wants to converse with you. And those of you who date quiet girls, you should know they're quiet with everyone else. That means they'll talk to you. People sometimes date a quiet girl and they think that means she won't talk to them a lot. Well, if she's going to connect with you, she'll talk to you. And she might talk to you more than any other girl would, because she's quiet with everyone else. And she has the same need emotionally to share with people what's going on in her life. And if she isn't getting that need filled with other people, well, then she'll get it filled with her spouse. But these were all examples we've discussed. I want to discuss a different point tonight, which we touched on, but I want us to expand. And that is the need for commiseration as it manifests itself in complaints. And this touches upon where we're headed, where our goal is to discuss criticism, but it's sometimes misunderstood. A husband comes home, and it's not so uncommon that he'll be greeted at the door with a tremendous sigh. Now, if it were the neighbor who were knocking at the door, she'd have a smile on her face. And if the neighbor were asking her, "How's everything going?" she'd say, "Oh, great. I mean, the kids were up all night, and we're okay." And she'd manage a smile. But when the husband comes home, it's as though she saves her most tired expression, her heaviest sigh, her greatest complaints for him. And a husband can walk into the house and suddenly hear, "Hi, thank goodness you're home. You can't imagine how tough it's been. You forgot to take out the garbage this morning, and the house has been stinking. I had nowhere to put the garbage. The dishes have been piling in the sink. The kids have been running around the house. They found the crayons and they wrote on the walls." And he hasn't yet put his bag down, and he already has a list of 15 things that have gone wrong today. "You can't imagine how much my back hurts. I've been working so hard today." It's not uncommon that a husband feels like she's been saving all her complaints for him. And you know what?
She has.
When something hurts, so it can hurt, and then it can hurt differently when we have a source of empathy, of sympathy. If a child, my sister-in-law, she's now 7, but once upon a time she was 5. So she was once playing on the porch, and along came a little ant. So an ant crawls up, and she sees the ant, and she yells, "Yikes, mug, an ant! Where's the boy?" She looks around, and there's no boys around. None of her siblings are around. So she sees her sister, her big sister, and she says, "There's an ant! Where are the boys?" And her sister, my wife, tells her, "The boys aren't home. They're in shul. They'll be back in an hour." And she looks at her, and she looks the other way. Says, "No boys?" So my wife says, "No boys." She says, "Okay." She goes over, takes her 2 fingers, squeezes the hand, and throws it in the garbage. The same girl that a second ago was yelling, "Yikes, an ant!" No one taught her this. No, on the porch. She squeezed it, killed the ant, picked it up, walked to the kitchen, threw it in the garbage, and went back to continue playing on the porch. She's 5. But if there's a boy around, then yikes, an ant. Now, guys, don't try this at home. If your wife yells, "Yikes, there's an ant," you got to take care of it. It's a calamity. You can't start saying, "I got to go, you'll deal, you know, it's okay, you're 15,000 times its size, it's more scared of you than you are of it, here's a tissue." No, it doesn't work. Your job is to take care of it. But, when there's someone present who can allay our fears, who can accept our fears, who can commiserate, and who can show us sympathy, then we feel more strongly. And you should know that it's not fake. The story of my sister-in-law might sound like it's fake, but when Chazal tell us that we have to take more care, "Hizaru b'tim atan shel nesheichem," be careful with the tears of your wives, "shemitoch shedimatan mitzuya," being that their tears are more easily found, "onatan mitzuyan," it's one is more easily in transgression of the biblical prohibition of causing someone else affliction with one's words. That means one has biblically transgressed if one caused her to tear. One cannot say, well, she tears more easily, so I didn't really do anything that's so bad. She's a crybaby. No, the Gemara says she tears more easily because she feels more deeply, and as such, one will more easily transgress. So her feelings are more easily touched to the positive and the negative. By the same token, she can very often feel like she needs his support. And it isn't uncommon that a girl who throughout her adult life did not cry and did not feel a need for a shoulder to lean on, when she marries, suddenly finds herself crying more. A girl will confide in her friends or in her spouse that ever since she's married, suddenly she finds herself crying more. Suddenly she feels like a crybaby. It's not uncommon for a girl to ask herself, what's wrong? Is there something wrong with my marriage? Why am I spending so much time crying? So there might be something wrong with the marriage, but hopefully there isn't. One of the things that happens is that when there's this connection between a boy and a girl, a husband and a wife, so she feels like she has a shoulder to cry on, and suddenly feelings that she didn't know before come out. And when a husband comes home and the wife starts saying, oh, there's so much work left to do, and I did so much today, she wants commiseration and appreciation. More often than not, a husband interprets what she's saying as a male. Well, we are male. And if I were home and my wife came home and I'd say, oh, my back is aching, what I'd want her to do is say, okay, I'll go fill up a hot water bottle for you. And if I said, well, the sink is filled with dishes, I wouldn't complain unless I'm goal-oriented. Well, I wouldn't say it if not for the fact that I wanted her to offer to go and do the dishes. So, there's a guy I know who came home from work and his wife said, I've been working so hard and I still haven't washed the floor and I still have to mark the kids, my students' papers, and I still have to take care of the different forms for the kids in school tomorrow. And the husband, upon hearing this, automatically assumed she wanted him to do the floors. Wrongfully assumed that she wanted him to do the floors. So he said, okay, honey, I'll do the floors. And when it happened the next night and the next night, he quickly found himself doing the floors night after night. She didn't want him to do the floors. He's been doing the floors. It's been quite a number of years and he's still doing the floors. Only he's doing the floors, and once he started doing the floors, she started complaining about the dishes. So he's doing the dishes. And when he started doing the dishes, he didn't solve the issue, because he comes home and she's saying, well, how am I going to manage the shopping? So now on the way home, he does the shopping, gets home to do the dishes and the floors. Because every time she expresses her pain, instead of showing caring, instead of saying, yes, you work so hard, I feel so bad, instead of listening to her and showing that he appreciates everything she does, he automatically interprets it as a male. If she's complaining, she wants a solution. She wants a solution, I'll give a solution. He gave a solution, that wasn't what she wanted. So he's doing more and more, and she's still complaining. So he comes home, and eventually he says, wait a second, I don't understand. You said the floor was too much, I'm doing the floor. You said the dishes, I'm doing dishes. You said the shopping, I'm doing the shopping. One thing after another, you know there's a limit. And she's like, you don't do what I want. What do you mean I don't do what you want? Why? Because she's speaking female and he's understanding male. He's offering male answers when she wants female answers. Now this is a major cause for many couples' dissatisfaction, because a husband feels, I can never please her. She's always complaining. And he doesn't understand that her complaint is not a complaint about him. For us men, if you're complaining, that means you're not happy. If you're not happy, I'm not doing enough to make you happy. So tell me, what do you want me to do? Ah, you're complaining about X, I'll take care of X. And we have to switch out of that mode and learn to understand that sometimes, and maybe even often, the complaint is an expression of pain, an expression of tired, an expression of feeling, and the response that is expected is a response of feeling, a response of commiseration. Not a solution. But being male, we work with problem, solution. Give me a challenge, I have to solve it. So if you gave me a challenge, then the solution must be to solve your challenge. No, the solution might be to listen to me, to take the time and say, oh, you had a hard day. Why don't I put up a cup of tea? So a husband comes home and his wife starts telling him, there are so many dishes to do, and there's the garbage to take out, and the toilets haven't been cleaned in 2 weeks, and the baby's wailing, and I haven't had an ounce of sleep in the last 20 hours. So he says, honey, I'll get to it. 1 second, let me put down my bag. I'll go. I'll do the dishes. I'll do the garbage. I'll take care of the papers. And she says, why didn't you offer me a cup of tea? And he says, I don't understand. I offered you to do everything you said. You still want me to make a cup of tea? And she's frustrated and he's frustrated. She didn't want all the other things. She wanted him to say, you're working very hard. Let's sit down for a cup of tea. You must need a break. Let's sit down and talk. Let's have a few minutes. That's what she wanted. It's not that she wanted everything else plus the cup of tea. She wanted the time, the appreciation, the commiseration. She wanted the connection, the feeling. He automatically assumed she wants a solution. You guys understanding? You with me? Okay. This is just, it's very easy to understand it today. It's very easy to understand it today. Remember it when you get married. Yeah.
By offering commiseration,
often, yes.
By taking care of things, you often do the opposite.
Nothing here is ironclad. Sometimes she does want you to do the dishes. I'm not saying that not. I'm just saying be aware that this option also exists. And a husband that will know to give the moral support will be giving oftentimes much more than the husband that does the dishes. Now, that doesn't mean that a husband can say, okay, I don't do anything. You have a problem? Tell me. I'll listen. I'm all ears. We'll sit down for a cup of tea. I mean, you could understand if the exact opposite happens. A husband comes home and the wife says, you didn't take out the garbage this morning. The kids have homework they need help with. The dishes need to be done and the bills haven't been paid. And he says, honey, I'll make you a cup of tea. Let's sit down and talk. And she'll say, don't make me that cup of tea. Go do the dishes. Go help the kids. Go do the bills. We could understand the reverse. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm just saying we have to be aware that this side also exists. And this side very often isn't nourished. Because being male, we would much rather do 500 solutions to 500 problems and not take 10, 15 minutes to sit down and just chat. Yeah?
The other thing seems most obvious is that you should ask your wife if she can do the dishes before you do them.
Oh, so that goes on to a different point. The Gemara says, and that's where it gets tricky. The Gemara says when a husband wants intimate time together, he isn't embarrassed to ask for it directly. But Hashem created the woman in a way that's more tzanua, and the woman will not ask for it directly. She'll allude it, but she won't ask directly. And this is a reference not only to times of intimacy, it's a reference to our modes of communication. The concept is called in the Gemara's Lashon, Ish Tovah Bapeh, a man asks for what he wants with his mouth, Isha Tovat Balev, a woman asks for what she wants in her heart. She won't say it overtly. She'll allude it. And that's where it gets tricky, because sometimes what she wants is that you should understand the inference and take care of the other things. But taking care of the other things might not be enough. It might not be what she wants at all. But even if you do, we have to know that the spiritual side, her emotional side also needs a boost, also needs the time. So that was the main point I wanted us to discuss tonight as far as communications. And now we'll go over to the other point, criticism. We'll continue on that. This is a point that's also often misunderstood. I had a friend who was having trouble with his, well, it began when they were almost engaged and suddenly an issue arose. And I was the shadchan. So
you were the wife?
Yeah. So my wife, the girl was talking to my wife, and I was friendly with him and I knew her. I mean, I set them both up. So the kala turns to me and my wife and tells us there's this and this issue. They're not yet a kala, they're not yet engaged. And I go over to the guy and I ask him, is everything okay? And he says, yeah, everything's fine. Now I know that this shidduch is on the verge of engagement and it's on the verge of explosion. It's on the verge of breaking up. So I come home and my wife asks me, did you talk to him? So I say, no. So she says, why not? So I say, because I asked him if everything's okay. And he said, yes. And my wife looks at me like, yeah. So I said, so I walked away. I went to continue learning. And my wife says, no, that's how you have conversation. So I say, yeah, that's how men have conversation. If he wants to talk to me, he'll talk to me. If he doesn't want to talk to me, he won't talk to me. So my wife said, introduced me to a new concept in conversation that's called, by women having conversation, and by men it's called prying. You go over to the guy and say, maybe you want to talk about it. Maybe I understand things aren't going so well, so maybe we should talk. So I did that, and lo and behold, he spoke. And we, Baruch Hashem, today they're married with two children. They did work it out. That's an excellent question. You never know if a couple's happy. You can never know that. Maybe you could know if they're unhappy, but you can't know if they're happy. But by women, they expect you to ask them. When women talk to women, so if you care about me, then you will ask me. If one woman confides in another woman, tomorrow I have a big test by the doctor. So by men, a guy told me last week he had a court case pending. So I spoke to him the day of the court case. After the court case, I asked how to go. So the guy said, Baruch Hashem. And the conversation continued. So my wife also knew about it. So I get off the phone. My wife asked me, so how'd the court case go? I said, I don't know. What does it mean you don't know? I said, well, I asked how to go. And the answer was Baruch Hashem. So by women, that would be an invitation to ask, Baruch Hashem, what? How to go? By men, if you do that, you're prying, right? You guys all understand me. Yeah. But by women, it's not that way. A woman very often wants you to go further and ask, well, how did it go? So that's why Emmanuel's point is very well taken. That sometimes you do have to initiate conversation. Sometimes that's expected of you if you care about me. So you'll ask me for more information. And for men, this is often counterintuitive. But we have to understand that sometimes the other side does expect us to do that. And again, this is a difficult balance. Like Emmanuel said before, you're not looking to initiate conversations that are unnecessary. If the other side needs it, so we participate and we talk and we do express an interest and we do listen and talk and hear all about what the other side is going through. So but at the same time, we're not necessarily, we don't have to go searching. Or maybe tonight you want to talk and let's. That's not the idea. If the other side has a need, then part of that need is sometimes for us to be interested and interested enough to ask the correct questions. But at the same time, we don't have to always be the one to initiate these conversations. We just have to do our part. Again, this is a fine balance because this is a difference between men and women. There's nothing you could do. You're male and she's female. And her needs are not exactly matching to our tendencies. So we match ourselves to an extent, but to an extent she also has to match herself to us. We can't always, we can't almost ever figure out what she really wants. So we can work with what we know, but we can't second guess and spend our life trying to figure out what she means and what she wants.
The best thing is to ask other women.
Okay.